From KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Maggie Wall. Salmon fishermen waiting for disaster reliefs for the 2016 pink salmon season are being told they'll have to keep waiting. Hooligan, that much-loved but little-understood fish that's vital for many subsistence users in the state. We look at a study to learn more about the fish, which cause a springtime frenzy when they return to spawn. And finally, the Coast Guard has had a number of successful rescues of fishermen the past several weeks. One vessel, the Masonic, had conducted safety drills just hours before the longliner got into trouble. The result? All five crew members were airlifted safely home to Sitka. All that coming up on this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report, right after this.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report is provided by the Stosh and Claudia Anderson Fund, supporting conservation and harvesting of Alaska's wild, sustainable fisheries.
The 2016 Kodiak pink salmon season was so bad that it qualified as a federal disaster. But relief funding is stalled on the desk of the Office of Management and Budget in Washington, D.C. Until it gets approved, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, local representatives, and pink salmon fishermen themselves are stuck in a holding pattern, not knowing when the money is coming or even who is eligible to receive it. KMXT's Kavitha George has this report on how the holdup is affecting Kodiak.
House Representative Louise Stutes is frustrated, to say the least, when it comes to pink salmon disaster relief funding.
Obviously, the government shutdown had somewhat of an effect, but it shouldn't have had more than a month or two. Our contacts with the feds were telling us approval should be happening any day. Any day it's going to happen. And just hold on.
Pink salmon catches dipped in 2016 to their lowest levels since 1975. At the request of the Walker administration, Congress appropriated $56 million to address the disaster last year. So what's the holdup? Stutes says that for months, the disaster relief plan developed with ADF&G and the National Marine Fisheries Service has been sitting on the White House Office of Management and Budget desk waiting for approval.
Now the estimate that we're hearing is that OMB plans to have the grant approved before June 1st, and then it will go back to NOAA for grant processing. However, as you might imagine, we're not holding our breath based on the Fed's current track record in adhering to their own timeline. We don't want people out spending their dough just yet.
In the meantime, Kodiak pink salmon fishermen are gearing up for the 2019 season, and many are still feeling the hit of a bad couple of years with no federal disaster aid money. So how long in total have you been waiting for it?
Since 2016, when we didn't catch any pinks.
That's Eric O'Brien, a Kodiak set netter.
Further than that, the 2018 season was a disaster for pinks. Luckily, we had a little bit of late season reds, and on the island, we've got a couple seasons we can hope for to make ends meet.
As a result, O'Brien says he's entering the 2019 season in a less than ideal situation. He's had to take out a loan to buy supplies and gear for the upcoming harvest. That's not entirely uncommon for fishermen, he says, but the last several seasons have made him nervous about starting the season in debt.
I was really counting on some of those disaster funds.
O'Brien thinks he'll be eligible for the disaster relief funding since he fished the 2016 season and can show a decrease in revenue between that season and previous ones. But the official eligibility requirements won't be determined until the plan gets OMB approval. Rachel Baker, Deputy Commissioner with Fish and Game, says once the plan is approved, her department will help to determine who's eligible. Then they'll work on outreach to make sure fishermen and processors know how to apply for direct payments.
We can't really do anything until the spending plan is approved by the federal government because it could change. They technically have the authority to change it. And so we're trying to get as much ready as we can, but we can't actually start the distribution process until we get the spending plan approved.
Until then, Stutes is encouraging fishermen and process workers to contact Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, as well as Representative Don Young, to ask them to put pressure on OMB. The 2019 pink salmon season will start to ramp up in mid-July. In Kodiak, I'm Kavitha George.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits at alaskaboat.com.
The Chilkoot Indian Association continues its hooligan study with the help from the Tuktoyaktuk Watershed Council. Hooligan are a long-loved but little-understood subsistence fish for people in the Chilkat Valley. Claire Strempel of KHNS in Haines has more.
Tony Strong is using a dip net to catch hooligan, a small smelt fish in the Chilkoot River.
In that rock creates a small back eddy, and that's where the fish will come up to and get a little rest. That's where I can capture them.
Strong fills his net with a practiced hand. He's been out in the water for a while, but his clothes are still clean and dry. His mother and grandmother taught him how to harvest the fish when he was a little boy. He's got 3 15-gallon buckets he's filling with the silver and black fish. The fish have been running for about a week, but they won't be around much longer.
So we smoke it, we dry it, we freeze it, and various other things. Eat it right quick.
Hooligan don't run everywhere. That's why a couple of these buckets will be on a plane this afternoon.
And then I'm going to send 15 gallons down to Juneau to a cousin whose family is from Clukwan. That's what I'm doing, is gathering for her. Then I'll come back tomorrow and get for myself.
He's not the only one out fishing. Two girls walk barefoot up the bank carrying big buckets of fish, and gulls swarm the river. Humpbacks feed in the inlet, and upstream, otters are catching hooligan too.
As well as being a very important subsistence food source, they're also incredibly important for marine mammals and seabirds.
Meredith Pokhart is the director of the Tokshinuk Watershed Council.
And that's it's a huge food source for these animals and for sea lions in particular. So it's a really vital piece of our whole ecosystem. And so culturally, we're looking at this from the subsistence side, but also ecologically, it's a very important food source.
That's why the Tokshinuk Watershed Council partnered with the Chilkoot Indian Association, or CIA, about a decade ago. They're helping them with their hooligan study.
Prior to 2010, there was zero population data for the Northern Inland Canal, and so that was why this study started, is just to gather that baseline population data.
Back then, NOAA Fisheries had just declared the hooligan a threatened species down south. They're protected under the Endangered Species Act from British Columbia to Northern California. The populations up here in the Upper Lynn Canal aren't threatened. They aren't managed either. So the Chilkoot Indian Association decided to start keeping track. Hooligan don't always come back to the same river to spawn. The Chilkoot is having a big run this year, and Pokhart says there's a lot of activity on the Farabee River and at Tysinke Harbor. The Chilkat and Katsihin aren't seeing as many fish.
Not scientists. We're laborers.
Mike Binky, Corey Grant, and Danny Willard are catching hooligan for the population study. They stand over plastic buckets armed with small clippers. The fish wriggle in water that's milky with eggs.
Do the eggs.
Eggs.
Mm-hmm. They're currently
fish
spawning.
Eggs.
So as you pick them up, they'll squirm and they'll squirt
yeah,
out.
Yeah, they squirt out.
But these aren't fish to eat. They're clipping the adipose fin, then letting them swim on upriver. They count each fish they clip.
So every 10 clips, we make a click.
Okay.
And then we write all those down, and then they find out somehow through that way the average amount of fish that's come through the river.
Upriver, there's another team also counting fish. They keep track of how many clipped fish they find, so they can extrapolate the total number of fish on the river.
Nobody really knows this guy's life cycle.
Ted Hart is the fisheries specialist for CIA.
Well, we're trying to get an age, trying to figure out when they spawn. Do they spawn multiple times? Do they go back out to the ocean? Where did they go? But it's still hard to say, so we're just going to keep gathering information, and then we'll start to see these trends. They'll be a little more visible.
He's working on a newer part of the study. He collects environmental DNA, or eDNA. He takes a boat to gather water samples from other rivers in the region, then sends the samples to a lab in Oregon. They can determine how many fish are in the water just by testing it. It's a way to get a broader regional understanding of where the fish go every year. And it works better on wide or braided rivers, where it's hard to get a solid count by hand. The hooligan may be mysterious, but back on the Chilkoot, Tony Strong knows one thing for sure.
It's delicious. It's an acquired taste.
He shields his eyes against the sun and waves at some friends on the bridge. Gulls sweep overhead, aiming for the dark spots of the river, where the water is black with fish. In Haines, I'm Claire Strempel.
Support for the Alaska Fisheries Report comes from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans, on the web at alaskaseafood.org.
A helicopter from Coast Guard Air Station Sitka safely rescued all 5 crew members of a fishing boat which sank south of Baranof Island early Tuesday morning, May 7th. The Coast Guard credits the high level of preparedness of the fishermen aboard the 70-foot longliner Masonic for the successful outcome of the incident. They had conducted safety drills and had a safety inspection just hours before their vessel went under. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The Coast Guard received a single Mayday radio call from the Masonic at about 2:30 a.m. on May 7th. Further attempts to reach the Masonic by radio were unsuccessful. But the vessel was equipped with an automatic identification system, or AIS, which allowed the Coast Guard to pinpoint its location a few miles south of Cape Decision, about 80 miles from Sitka on the southernmost end of Kuyu Island. It's a required item of equipment on larger boats that fish more than 3 miles offshore, even if they're not the newest boats in the fleet.
I felt very bad about the boat. It's a 1923 wood-hulled, old halibut-style schooner.
Steve Ramp, the Coast Guard's commercial fishing vessel safety examiner in Sitka, had been on board the Masonic that very morning.
Nice, pretty lines on it. It's well-maintained by the owner. And I feel terrible that the boat encountered this problem. But I feel pretty good that what I do contributed to a safe outcome of getting the people home safe.
What Ramp did was inspect the safety equipment on the Masonic, including verifying that the automatic identification system was working. Again, it's a compulsory inspection for larger fishing vessels that work offshore, but it's not punitive. Ramp gave the Masonic an inspection 2 weeks ago, generated a work list for a few things that needed to be corrected, and issued a Coast Guard decal Monday morning, shortly before the vessel departed on its fateful trip. A helicopter from Air Station Sitka and the cutter Anacapa from Petersburg both responded to the last known location of the Masonic, as reported by the AIS. The cruise ship Oosterdam also diverted to aid in the search. The helicopter located the vessel at 4 a.m. Tuesday in the vicinity of Coronation Island, where it had gone aground. The five crew members were in a life raft tethered to the stern of the Masonic. All were wearing cold water immersion suits. Ramp says the crew had practiced putting on the awkward Gumby suits just prior to his inspection, including a new member of the crew for whom this was the first voyage.
There's two kinds of people when I encounter them during exam. Some of them are, they've been in a situation where they had to go in the water, and they believe 100% in those survival suit drills, doing them every month, and fire drills and everything else. And there's other people that nothing bad has ever happened, so they don't think they're as important. So our program kind of instills in them a legal importance, if not a moral importance, to do the drills and make sure they and their crew are well-trained to deal with emergencies.
And that well-prepared boat, says Ramp, was the Masonic. The Air Station Sitka helicopter hoisted all five crew members aboard and returned them to Sitka uninjured. The cause of the incident is under investigation. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association, providing U.S. Coast Guard accepted hands-on safety training for all of Alaska fishermen and their families. AMC at amsea.org or 907-747-3287.
That's it for this week's edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help from Claire Strumpel at KHNS in Haines, Robert Woolsey at KCAW in Sitka, and Kavitha George here at KMXT in Kodiak. Do yourself a favor and pay attention during those safety drills. For KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Maggie Waugh.